Some people spend their whole lives waiting. Yesterday was only so-so. Today is dull. But tomorrow, oh, tomorrow the sun will come up like a Sousa March. The air will taste like cool wine. And every hour will be better than the one before. The one thing you can be sure of when you meet people with that psychology is that they will miss most of their lives. They won't see anything lovely today because it isn't tomorrow and it seems common. They won't hear anything lovely today because their ears are cocked for a far-off music more exotic than the melody playing right now. Never living, but only hoping to live. Always looking forward to being happy. They never are. For them, there is no abiding moment. And one day, when most of life is gone, they suddenly awaken to the bitter knowledge that while they waited, all the quietly beautiful things got away, and the music of the ordinary day faded, and the impossibly thrilling tomorrow never came, so that in truth they lost it all. There were a couple of English poets once, good friends, named William Wordsworth and Samuel Taylor Coleridge, who decided to publish a book of their poetry in 1798. They wrote a preface in which one of them, Wordsworth, said his part of their adventure was to wake people up to the glory of the commonplace. He said familiar things that we see every day tend to get a film over them after a while, so that what is beautiful about them is overlooked. He said he wanted to write about those things in a way that would cause people to see them again as if for the first time. So he wrote about rocks and hills and trees and lakes and farm life and walks on country roads and sunrise and rainfall. And at least one man, one of the most brilliant men who ever lived, John Stuart Mill, who had lost interest in everything and grown terribly despondent, said that when he read that poetry and saw the everyday world with fresh eyes, it literally saved his life. Sometimes we don't need help from another person. We learn all by ourselves. During the years I was in St. Louis, I spent a lot of afternoons seeing people at Barnes Hospital, especially in the cancer wards. People from out of town, some even from out of state, in for their last-ditch desperate treatment. There were days when, as I left the hospital, I would see a couple of those people come outside into the daylight for the first time in weeks and discover that the grass, the humble, ordinary grass that we walk on every day without seeing it, was suddenly almost unbearably beautiful. I've actually seen them bend down and touch it with wonder, regardless of my standing nearby, and then look up at the sky and shed tears of happiness just to be able to see it without a window in the way. The leaves of a tree, the white clouds moving, the touch of a light breeze on their cheeks, the routine kiss of a normal day. I stopped behind a man late one afternoon while he ran his hands over the rough bark of a tree, finding something special for himself in what it meant as he stood there in tears. I had the feeling that it would be a long time before he got tired of a typical day. You can't feel with that intensity all the time, but somewhere between that level of awareness and our usual oblivion, there has to be a middle ground that makes life better. The classic way of saying it, I suppose, comes from one of the Psalms. This is the day which the Lord hath made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. Sun, rain, fog, snow, this is the day God has given. We make the most of it. I knew a man in St. Louis once, Paul Logue. My children remember. A vice president for Monsanto who took that advice very literally. Every morning, soon after he woke up, he went into a little room not much bigger than a large closet, which he had set aside as a place for meditation, and he knelt to thank God for the gift of that particular day. Now don't imagine some sentimental, weak wimp, afraid to face the day without help. This was a tall, immensely dignified man with a strength of presence that dominated any room he walked into. But he stopped each morning in that little closet and knelt without a hint of embarrassment to ask help in using that priceless and irretrievable day well. And then he had his breakfast and went downtown to work. He told me once, as we sat at his dining room table, that a poet, whose name he had forgotten, taught him about the miracle of an ordinary day. I have walked them through, the poet said, and found the quick surprise of their hours. Some lovely, unexpected thing to do, I tread them softly. They are hallowed ground. There are no common days. There are no common days. What a difference it would make in some people's approach to life if they really believed that. What are you doing? I asked the student in the snack bar. Oh, just killing time, he says. And he looks bored enough to mean it. What a murder. One doesn't have to be doing something all the time. There is such a thing as creative solitude, a regrouping of forces. But the person who really does squander the day because he sees no wealth in it, because it is not yet tomorrow, that person is the most reckless of all spendthrifts. Because the money you lose, you may get back. The friendship you break may be restored. The house you ruin may be built up again, but no power on earth can bring back a wasted day. So we're honoring this morning the normal day. Not the holiday or the anniversary or the bright beginning of something, but just the slightly faded denim of just any old day. It may surprise you to know that even this unexpected topic gets touched on in one of Paul's letters. Some people think that we should observe special days to honor God, but there are others who say this is wrong and foolish, that every day alike belongs to God. I suppose if it were possible to make people really believe that every day is sacred, we'd have the most remarkable revolution in human behavior that you could imagine. But familiarity, if you let it, really does breed contempt. A prophet, Christ said, has some honor, except in his own country and among his own relatives and in his own family, where everybody knows him too well. It was a personal reflection, but maybe he was also reminding us of our tendency to pass up the ordinary familiar kindness for a more romantic one, when he said that whoever gives a cup of water in his name would serve the cause of the kingdom. Just an ordinary cup of water. But the cup goes ungiven because we haven't a pitcher to give, or because we're wishing we had something more exotic. And the normal day slips by unnoticed because the miracle of rain and snow and autumn leaves and end in summer blue and gold are so well known that they hardly register on our senses. Well, somebody says, it sounds all right, but what has it to do with Christianity, with religion? And my answer would be everything. Because it seems a foolish and futile thing to me to marvel at miracles that are 2,000 years old and miss the one that happens this evening. A man looks at you over his newspaper and smiles the quiet assurance of his love. A baby takes its first step. A brave woman looks at you in the hospital, smiles through pain and terror, and says she feels quite well, thank you, and she's glad you dropped by. A whole universe of miracles, so commonplace that we take them for granted. We spin tales of a heaven far off, and we stumble blindly through the only one we can be sure of. So yes, I think this conviction that no day is common has everything to do with religion. That unless every day is a gift from God, filled with possibilities of surprise, hallowed by its own fragile, never-to-be-repeated uniqueness, then a profession of religion is a mockery. My daughter read the perfect expression of what I'm trying to say. It was a prayer of sorts, trembling right on the edge of sentimentality, I think not quite falling over the edge. Normal day. That address you can make to 360 days a year, at least. Normal day, let me be aware of the treasure you are. Let me learn from you, love you, savor you, bless you before you depart. Let me not pass you by in quest of some rare and perfect tomorrow. Let me hold you while I may, for it will not always be so. One day I shall dig my fingers into the earth, or bury my face in the pillow, or stretch myself taut, or raise my hands to the sky and want more than all the world your return. Do you ever think how many ordinary, normal days pass unvalued simply because they are there, underfoot? And then one day, they are not. Nothing is normal anymore. The job is over. One is through with it after all the years of going and coming. I remember the executive from Beach who cried in my office one day and said, after they had forced his retirement early, "But what am I going to do in the morning? What do I do? Where do I go after my cup of coffee?" There's the love that seemed so safe, all but overlooked in the routine of daily things, and then something happens. The sun falls from the sky, and you sit in the dark and try to remember or to forget, whichever gives less pain. Or the child grows up through the slow passage of all those ordinary days, and one day the bed stays made until you change it just to have something to do. I suppose someone who never had what the rest of us take so much for granted might be able to wake us up better than anybody else. So hear the words of that courageous woman named Helen Keller. "I who am blind can give one hint to those who can see, one admonition to those who would make full use of the gift of sight. Use your eyes as if tomorrow you would be stricken blind. And the same for the other senses. Hear the music of voices, the song of birds, the strains of an orchestra, as if you would be stricken deaf tomorrow. Smell the perfume of flowers. Taste with relish each morsel, as if tomorrow you could never smell and taste again." So, dearly beloved, tomorrow, Tuesday, Wednesday, try it. Walk out of the morning with these words: "This is the day which the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it." Amen.